You came back in 1944. On
45.
sorry, you were in 45.
Yes.
I think Lillian said she thought she came back before. You both came back in 45. I thought it was slightly earlier than that. I thought they came back a year before, but I've got that wrong. No, just me. Well, I obviously there were shipful of people coming all the time. I mean, there must have been evacuees arriving back every single day.
Well, not exactly every day, but they were coming back at, probably on a monthly interval at least, because they were coming back from Madeira and Northern Ireland, England and Jamaica. So it wasn't just from the one place.
So how is it, just as again with your historian's hat on, was it random where people were sent because there were so many different places? How did they organise it?
Well, what happened was that the original idea was to send the people to North Africa. But then the British decided to attack the French fleet, which upset the French, and they gave people like my wife 24 hours to get out of Morocco. So they came back to Gibraltar. The governor would not allow them ashore at first, and they were in virtually ferry boats at the time. And they wanted to send them to England in those same boats. Of course, the people, the men in Gibraltar had got up in arms and created a lot of noise in Gibraltar. In fact, Tito Benedi, who you'll probably meet at some stage, I think it was his father or his uncle, was the one that, in fact, faced up to the government, to the governor, and arranged for the people to come ashore from the boats, on the understanding that they would return to a reasonably sized boat, in good condition, to take them back to the UK, over to the UK.
So why wouldn't the governor let them ashore?
Because they were frightened that they wouldn't get them off again. That was the problem. Then some of the people were sent to across to Jamaica. And to Madeira, but there was some problem with the safety of crossing the Atlantic, so they decided to send what was left to the UK. That is as I understand it.
And Ireland, Northern Ireland.
No, Ireland. They were never sent to Ireland directly. The people that went to Ireland were sent from London to Ireland.
Oh, like your wife.
That's right.
So do you think there may be some ex-Gibraltarians still in Northern Ireland?
Oh, yes, definitely. In fact, I have an article written by one of the ladies in Ireland, which details the whole story, and I can give you a copy of that if you wish, explains the whole operation and all the various camps that they were staying at. And they were only sent there as a temporary measure. But some of them didn't get back till 1952.
When you talk about the governor, the British governor, obviously, mm-hmm. I mean, was there any antagonism then between the Gibraltarians and the British establishment at that point?
Not really, no. I mean, the thing was that we were so used to being under the heel, shall we say, of the military, that we just had to accept. We accepted what was done. And in actual fact, most of the governors have always been accepted by the local population. In fact, the latest government governor has got himself an extension because he was so well liked. And the majority of governors were pretty good. There was one particular governor who was very antagonistic. If he'd have had his way, he'd have got rid of all the civilians in Gibraltar. And he actually put that in writing.
What, the men as well?
He said he wanted all civilians off the rock. He wanted Gibraltar to be a garrison, nothing else. And that had nothing to do with the war.
Just a permanent garrison.
That's right.
Yeah, his own little garrison,
that's right.
Maybe.
That's right.
Yeah, interesting. Right, well, that's very interesting. I think we will move on now to talking about the explosion, because that was... We have done a little bit, haven't we, actually, about... So you came back and then you started... I mean, so I haven't asked you this, actually, so I'm just tracing it in my mind. What about when you came back, Where did you go to school then? Was there a new school set up?
Well, yes. There was a school in South Barracks, which I went to, which, as I said before, was run by the Royal Army Education Corps. And I was in that school for a while. And then when I was old enough, they opened up Plata Villa, which was just down from my house, which then became the Gibraltar Grammar School, and I went to that. I was there till I was 14. Then I decided that I was not academic; I was more hands-on. So I said to my father, "I'd like to have an apprenticeship." So I then took an exam in the dockyard and became an apprentice engineer in the dockyard. And that's when the famous explosion occurred.
So that was, we're 1952, is that right? So tell me about that day.
Well, I was working on a ship called the St. Austell Bay, which was moored off the just outside of the tower in the dockyard, and I was working on the refrigerators at the time, and I needed some spares, so I walked back to the workshop, and just as I opened the door of the workshop, which was the Nissen hut, the explosion occurred, and it caught me and threw me the whole length of the Nissen hut. And I ended up with my back against the rear wall of the Nissen hut. And of course there was chaos in the dockyard. There was ambulances and fire equipment running around all over the place, and nobody knew what was going on. We were told to go home, which we did, and all the windows in my house had blown out. And mess everywhere, and of course my friend Ernie, who you'll meet later on, he was actually involved directly because he was in the torpedo department, but he'll tell you that story, which is very, very interesting. There was two people died on the ship, and it turned out ultimately that it was the unstable powder in the amatol in the mines that blew up.
It must have been terrifying.
Oh, it was, yes. I mean, the problem was, of course, that you didn't know what it was. It was just a huge bang, and it wasn't until later that we found out what had actually happened. Everybody was kept away from the area, obviously, because they were worried the ship was loaded.
That it might go again.
It might have gone again. You know, this is the big problem. There were mines floating around everywhere. But,
I mean, I'm just picking a few things out from your article, which was So the ship itself had come in because of the naval dockyard.
Yes, it was unloading. It was unloading mines and torpedoes to put into the store.
But why did they, this probably sounds really naive, but why did they need that many mines and torpedoes for practicing? Because they weren't at war at that point, were they?
Don't forget that the Cold War was on its way.
So they were getting ready.
They were making sure that they had enough stuff for anything that was required, because obviously during the Cold War, Gibraltar was quite important, because the German Russian fleet in the Black Sea would come through the straits to go into the Atlantic if they needed to. So obviously they wanted to have enough equipment there if they needed it.
So possibly more spy stories.
Could be. I didn't really get involved much with that at all, because I was obviously as a young boy. It didn't really occur. I don't recall any incidents of spying at that time, but there obviously was. Obviously, if there was military arrangement actions going on, I would imagine that there would have been some but I don't know of any. But one of the interesting incidents which occurred to me when I was an apprentice, I was working inside number one dock, at the bottom of the dock. We were changing the propeller on a destroyer. And the HMS Ocean, the aircraft carrier, came in. And there was a tremendous easterly wind blowing, which is our big prevailing wind. And they couldn't control the carrier. And they had all the engines on the aircraft, on the carrier, all the aircraft engines on the carrier, with the tugs, trying to get her alongside the wharf. And as she came in, the bow of the ship was overhanging the cassoon of the dry dock. I was down below. If that ship had actually touched the cassoon, it would have broken the cassoon and the whole sea would have gone in. I wouldn't be here today.
Because you were right underneath?
Right underneath, yes.
Oh, terrifying. 40,
50 feet below the sea level.
I was just thinking about when we were talking about the explosions, and I said, oh, you know, I'd heard of one happening in Halifax. Well, Halifax compared to Gibraltar is enormous.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it must have had an enormous, not just, excuse the pun, impact, but a huge impact on the country, because everybody must have known somebody who was close by or whatever.
Well, there was very little. They were very fortunate that it didn't happen a little bit later, because otherwise it would have killed a lot of people. It just happened that it occurred when everything was quiet, because it was right quite close to where the dock's gates was, and if it had occurred at lunchtime, you know, it would have caught all the people coming out for lunch, so it would have been a massacre. But fortunately, very few people died.
And was there ever any suspicion that it might have been some sort of sabotage?
No, it was definitely proven to be unstable explosive.
And what about, you talk in your article towards the end that there were the funerals of the men who died, a couple of fire officers, mm-hmm. weren't there, and wreaths were thrown. I mean, if it was today, it would be a huge thing, it would be on television, and, you know, what was it like? Can you remember?
No, I can't. No, there was a lot of it in the newspaper about it, but the, I mean, obviously the burial, the actual funerals were attended by the military and a lot of civilians and everything else. But I don't recall much of it coming up in the UK papers at all. In fact, what happens in Gibraltar gets very little acknowledgement in the UK.
But I was just thinking that you were there. You were in Gibraltar.
Yes.
Yes. Let's just talk a little bit about, is that, I think we've talked about the explosion now.
Yes.
That's fine. It's mm-hmm. really, really interesting. And eyewitness account is nothing mm-hmm. like that, you know. In fact, actually, I would ask you one more question about it. It's obviously you were terribly shocked because you were blown to the end of this Nissan hull. Mm-hmm. But can you just remember what it was like when you kind of emerged? What did you see?
Well, all I saw was everybody running around. You know, they were like headless chickens. Nobody knew what was going on, what had caused it. And it wasn't until, because we were sent away to get away out of it, we were sent from the dockyard. So it wasn't until the next day that we really found out from the people on the spot what had actually happened. We knew there had been an explosion on our ammunition ship. But obviously when we got back to work next morning is when we found out about what had physically happened. Of course, there was glass everywhere. And our workshop had to be cleaned out because there was glass everywhere. But apart from that, no, there was no real damage in our area. Because my workshop was at the more the southern end of the dockyard, going towards the dry docks.
And did you speculate with your mates what on earth was that?
Well, obviously, yes. I mean, we knew it. We had no idea what it could be. I mean, it could have been one of the underground ammunition dumps that had blown up or something like that. Because obviously, we know that there are tunnels in Gibraltar which are full of ammunition. So it could have been one of them.
Are there still?
Oh yes. There's a lot in Gibraltar that people don't know about.